To see everyone with us this evening. If you're a visitor, we are happy to have you. And I would like to explain that in the next few weeks, I am going to present a series that I have preached at a place or two. I think one place, and that is Pettusville. Pettusville had me out to narrate the Bible in a few lessons. Several of you, having heard those lessons, said that you would like to see those presented here. So I'm going to do that. Some of you have also heard of the series that I've presented, and this one I've presented at least two or three places, and that is a narration of the life of Paul. So I plan to do that one, but that will be down the road some piece. I hope that during the month of May, I can get this series presented. In the beginning, the Bible says God created the heavens and the earth. And the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God brooded upon the face of the waters. And God said, "Let there be light." And there was light. And God saw the light that it was good. And the light He divided from the darkness. And He called the light day, and the darkness He called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, day one. On the second day, God commanded that there be a space established between the waters that were upon the earth and the waters that would be up in the atmosphere. And thus He created the firmament. And when He spoke the commandment, it happened, it was so. And there was evening and there was morning. Second day. On the third day, God looked upon this world covered with water. And He said, "Let the dry land appear, and let the water be gathered into its place." And the continents rose shuddering up out of the waters. Millions of tons of water poured off these continents and gathered themselves into the seas that God ordained. He also commanded that the dry land bring forth the herbs and grass, yielding seed after their own kind. And it was so. On the fourth day, God commanded that the sun and the moon and the stars be the heavenly bodies that would determine the light and the darkness and the times and the seasons for man who would live upon the earth. On the fifth day, God commanded that the water, that the seas bring forth the swarms of living creatures that would swim in them. And He commanded that there be fowl that would fly in the air. On the sixth day, God created the various animals, the creeping things, and all the other animals that live upon the face of the earth. And last of all, He created man. And when He created man, He created man in His own image. And He prepared a garden for man to live in. This garden was in a place where we know of at least two rivers, the Tigris and the Euphrates. So this area called the Garden of Eden was made somewhere up in this area, right up in here at the upper end of the Mesopotamian Valley. God prepared that garden for man to live in. He planted there all sorts of trees that were good to eat. And then He brought the animals to Adam to see what Adam would call the animals. And as the animals came before Adam, He observed that there was the male and his female, but for Adam there was no counterpart. And therefore God caused Adam to fall into a deep sleep. And He took from his side a rib with the bone and the flesh thereof. And from that, using His great power, God created woman and brought her to Adam. And her name was Eve. And so these two became one, the first couple. They lived in the garden, but God had said, "Now you may eat of every tree in the garden except one. Of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you may not eat, because in the day you eat of that fruit you shall surely die." Eve was walking about in the garden one day when the devil approached her in the form of the serpent. This is he who in the New Testament is called that ancient serpent, the one who was the father of liars, a murderer from the beginning. Yes, this was the devil who approached Eve. And he said, "Yea, hath God said that you're not to eat of all of the trees in the garden?" She said, "We may eat of all of the trees in the garden except the one which is in the midst of the garden. Of that one God has said we are not to eat of it, because He said, 'Ye shall surely die if you eat of it.'" And the devil said, "You shall not surely die. Why, God doth know that in the day you eat of that fruit, you will be as God, knowing both good and evil. So Eve got to looking at the fruit, and it was a beautiful fruit, and it looked like it would taste delicious, and it was to be desired to make one wise. So she put forth her hand, and she took that fruit, and she ate of it, and she gave it to her husband with her, and he ate of it. And their eyes were open, but not in a good way. Now they were laden with guilt and shame and fear, and they knew what it was to be sinners. And they had had no clothes, but that had been no point to even consider. It was so natural. But now they were ashamed, and they hid themselves. And God came looking for them. He came walking in the cool of the garden. And he observed that Adam and Eve were not in sight. He said, "Adam, where are you?" And Adam said, "I was naked and I hid myself." God said, "Who told you that you were naked? Have you eaten the fruit of the tree that I told you not to eat of?" Adam said, "The woman thou gavest me, she gave to me and I did eat." God said to Eve, "What is this you have done?" And she said, "The serpent beguiled me." So then God spoke to the serpent. He said, "Because you have done this, you will be cursed beyond all of the other animals of the earth. You will crawl upon your belly and you will eat the dust of the ground. And I will put enmity between thee and the woman, between thy seed and her seed. He will bruise your head and you will bruise his heel." And then God spoke to the woman. He said, "Because you have done this, I will greatly multiply your pain in your conception and in your childbearing, and your desire shall be subject to your husband." And then he spoke to Adam, and he said, "Adam, because you have done this, the ground is going to be cursed for your sake, and it will no more produce as it has, but it will produce thorns and thistles, and you will eat your bread by the sweat of your face, and the day will come when you will return to the dust of the earth. You will return to the ground because you were made from the dust of the earth, and to the dust of the earth you will return." And then Adam and Eve were driven from the garden, no longer able to live in their paradise. As the years went by, they had children, and those children had children. And the population of the earth grew exceedingly, but it also grew to be exceedingly wicked. Now in the midst of all this darkness, bear in mind that one gleam of light that God gave in the first promise, that the seed of woman would come one day and he would bruise the head of Satan. He would bruise the head of that serpent. But now the world grew more and more wicked until finally God regretted that he had made the world, and he regretted that it had turned out the way it had. And therefore he determined that he would destroy the earth with a flood. But when he determined to bring that flood upon the earth, he observed Noah, a man who was righteous in all of his activities. And therefore God came to Noah and told him what he was about to do. And he told him to build an ark, a huge box, 450 feet long, 75 feet wide, and 45 feet high. And he told him to prepare this ark, to make it waterproof, and to put the animals and supplies on board. And Noah did so. Being warned of God and moved by his godly fear, he prepared an ark to the saving of his house. And so when the flood came down, the ark was borne up upon the face of the waters. But everything in whose nostrils was the breath of life perished in the flood. And the water bore the ark up above even the tallest mountains, at least 15 cubits above the tallest mountains. And about a year later, the ark was settled upon Mount Ararat, and the water was all gone. The water was upon the face of the earth the total time until it was dried, about a year. And at that time, Noah and his family got out of the ark, and this was up here in Mount Ararat. Through the years that followed, they made their way down this valley, coming along here, along the Tigris and Euphrates rivers, until they came down to this area that would one day be known as Babylon. And they came to a plain called Shinar. Now God had said to them, "I want you to scatter abroad. I do not want you to remain totally concentrated in one place." But when they got to Shinar, they said to one another, Let us build us a tower whose top shall reach unto the heavens, that we may make a name for ourselves, lest we be scattered abroad. Thus they were in total defiance of the decree of God. So God said, let us go down, and we will confuse the languages of men. And so God came down and smote men from the standpoint of creating all different kinds of languages. And then the families of the earth began to scatter abroad according to their families and according to their languages. And so Ham's descendants moved down here toward Canaan and on down toward Egypt. And some of his descendants remained out here. But Shem's people remained primarily in the Mesopotamian area, in this area right here. Japheth's descendants moved to the north and then to the west and to the east. And as they moved, they established civilizations. And years went by. Cities grew up, great cities indeed. There was one such city here at Ur of the Chaldees, located on the banks of the Euphrates River. There was a man who lived there by the name of Terah, and he had four children whose names are given. They were Nahor, Haran, Abram, and Sarah. Abram married his half-sister Sarah, and they lived here in Ur of the Chaldees. But then one day God came to Abraham and he said, Abraham, I want you to leave your country, leave your father's house, and leave your kindred, and go into a land that I will show thee. And I will make of you a great nation. And I will bless you and I will make your name great. And I will bless all families of the earth through you. And so Abraham rose up and with Terah and with other members of the family, a nephew Lot, his wife Sarah, they moved from Ur of the Chaldees up the Euphrates River, about 600 miles coming up here to Haran. And there Abraham remained until the death of his father Terah. And then Abraham set out, moving down toward this land. And when he left Ur, Abraham did not know where he was going. But he went out by faith, prepared to go wherever God would lead him. And so as he moved along, he came closer and closer to the land of Canaan. And when he came to the land of Canaan, he came to the Jabbok River. And he crossed the Jabbok, or across the Jordan River here, and he came up a valley that led up into the hill country. This valley was called the Wadi Farah. And when he came out at the top of that valley that led from the Jordan up to the top of the hill country, he found himself near the city of Shechem. And when he got to Shechem, he built an altar unto the Lord, and there he worshiped the Lord. And the Lord appeared unto him at Shechem. And God said, Abraham, I am going to give this land that you see all about you, I will give this land to your descendants that come after you. And so Abraham was given to understand that he was to live in that land all of the rest of his life, and that one day that land would be given to his descendants. So Abraham lived there in that land, but then he moved south. He came to a place called Bethel, near Ai, Bethel and Ai in this vicinity. And he built another altar, and he worshiped the Lord. But then there was a great famine that came upon the land. So Abraham took his family, and they moved down over into Egypt. They remained there for a while, and then they came back up into the land of Canaan. And they came back up there to the area of Bethel and Ai. Now Lot had grown to be very rich, and Abraham was very rich. They had many sheep and cattle of all kinds. And so they could not dwell together anymore. So their herdsmen began to fuss with one another. And Abraham called Lot to him, and he said, now listen, we are brethren. It is not fit that we should quarrel and argue and fuss like this. So you look about you and choose where you will go, and I will go the other direction. And so as Lot looked about him, he saw the well-watered plains of the Jordan down here at what then was the south end of the Dead Sea without this lagoon area down here. Down here was a very rich area with grass and water, and so Lot decided that he would move down there. When Lot left Abraham, God spoke to Abraham and repeated, I will give all of this land to you, Abraham, to your descendants after you. Get up and walk up and down through the midst of the land. And so Abraham did as God had said. Years went by, And there was no child. There was no child. And Abraham could hardly wait for God to appear and to say anything to him. So when God did speak to Abraham again, Abraham said, "Lord, what are you going to do, seeing I am childless? Do you intend for my steward, Eliezer, to be mine heir?" God said, "Abraham, go outside, look at the stars of the heavens. See if you can count them. So shall your seed be." And Abraham believed God, and it was counted unto him for righteousness. And he was called the friend of God. Abraham continued to live in that land, and he was a mortal man. He had challenges to face. On occasion he sinned. But he was a man who walked with God and sought God. And he worshiped God everywhere he went and everywhere he was. And finally the blessed day came when the son that was promised of God was born. Isaac was born. And Abraham was thrilled. He was delighted. It was indeed a time of laughter and celebration. And now Abraham could see that there was no obstacle remaining to God's fulfilling His promises because he had the son that God had promised. But some years after that son was born, one day God came to Abraham and He said, "Abraham, I want you to take your son, Isaac, your only son, the son that you love, take him to the land of Moriah. And there on a mountain that I will show thee, I want you to offer him to me as a burnt sacrifice." The Scriptures tell us not one word of what Abraham thought or said about the prospect of doing this, with the exception of Hebrews 11:19, which gives us insight into the reasoning of Abraham on the basis of the faith he had that enabled him to do this. Early the next morning he rose up. He took his son with him. He took servants with him. And they traveled for 3 days, coming to the land of Moriah. They were living in Beersheba at the time. They were living in Beersheba down here in the southern part of the country. They were traveling north, almost certainly in the region of Jerusalem, where Mount Moriah was designated later on. They got up there. And Abraham told the servant, "Now you remain here, and when we have finished with our worship, we shall return." And then he and Isaac set out going up the mountain, and Isaac was bearing the wood. And so Isaac, as they went along, said, "Father, here is the wood for the sacrifice, and here is the fire, but where is the sacrifice itself?" And Abraham said, "God will provide Himself a sacrifice, my son." And when they got to the place, Abraham set in order the stones for a rude altar there. And he bound Isaac and laid him upon the altar. And he took his knife, and he was preparing to cut the throat of the sacrificial victim, as was common when you offered a sacrifice. But as he prepared to cut his own son's throat and burn him to ashes, God said, "Abraham, Abraham, do the boy no harm. Now I know that you fear me above all else because you have been willing even to give me your son." Abraham looked around and he saw in a thicket nearby that a ram had been caught by its horns. And he went over and took that ram and he offered the ram in the place of his son. And he named the place Jehovah Jireh, a word that means "the Lord sees." And because the Lord sees, He provides. So Jehovah provides. But it's based on the idea that God sees what we need and can be counted on to provide whatever that is. So Abraham continued to live in the land. Sarah died. He buried her. And finally, Abraham himself died. By that time, he had gotten a wife for Isaac. Her name was Rebekah. And she was of Abraham's own family. She and Isaac lived in that land also, Isaac following after his father and living in that land. And God appeared to Isaac, and God said to him, "I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless all families of the earth through your seed. And I will give this land, the land of Canaan, to your descendants after you. And so by faith, Isaac continued to live in the land of his fathers. After 20 years, children were born to Isaac and Rebekah. Rebekah was told by the Lord that she was going to have twins because the twins were very active within her, as if they were struggling with each other, as if they were wrestling with each other for the mastery. And she was worried about this. And she said, "What does this mean?" And it was explained to her that she would have two sons. These two sons would be two nations. And that these two nations would indeed struggle with one another. And that the younger would be over the elder. And so it came to pass that when the sons were born, Esau was born first. And he was very red, and he had lots and lots of red hair. And when Jacob was born, he had hold of Esau's little heel. And so they called him one who takes by the heel. And so they were born. And they grew up very, very different. And when they were quite old, the way we look at it, Isaac was blind. And Isaac was thinking, "I don't know when I'm going to die. I better call Esau, my firstborn, in and give unto him the inheritance." But when he called Esau in, he said, "I want you to go and kill venison for me and prepare it the savory way that I like to eat it, and I will give you the blessing." Esau took off. Rebekah, overhearing this, set out to get the blessing for her favorite son, Jacob. So she had him to go kill a kid of the goats, and she fixed the meat the way that Isaac liked it. And she sent Jacob in. And he went in carrying the food, and he deceived his father. And he received the blessing, the inheritance from his father instead of Esau. Now, these were not the three promises. This was not the threefold promise of God. Isaac did not have the power to give those to Jacob. Only God had the power to do that. When Esau came back and found out what his brother had done, he was ready to kill him. He said, "I will wait until my parents are dead and then I will kill him." That was his plan. Isaac and Rebekah decided they would send Jacob away. And so they sent him north. And as Jacob fled, heading to the north, he came to a place located along this area called Luz. And he got there and he spent the night. And he got a stone, used it for a pillow. And he laid his head upon that pillow, and he had a dream. He dreamed of a ladder. The word means a ladder or a staircase. And there were angels going up and coming down in his dream. And above the staircase he saw God, and God spoke to him. And God said to Jacob, "I will make of you a great nation. I will bless all families of the earth through your seed. And I will give this land, the land of Canaan, to your descendants." And thus God repeated the threefold promise to Jacob, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Jacob traveled on north until he came back up to the area of Paddan Aram, back up to where Abraham's family had settled down. And when he got up there, he met a young woman whose name was Rachel. And he fell in love with her the moment that he saw her. And found out that they were relatives together. Let me show you where this is. Came up to this area right here. And that's where Abraham's family had continued to live. So he met Rachel, fell in love with her, found out they were related. And he came to live at her father's house for a while, after he had been there for a while, working, helping out. Laban said, "It's not right that you should stay here and work for nothing. What should I pay you?" And Jacob said, "How about letting me marry Rachel?" And Laban said, "Well, I'll have to let her marry somebody. Why not you? Okay, you'll have her if you work 7 years." And because of his love for Rachel, that did not seem to be a bad bargain to Jacob. And so he worked for the 7 years. But when the 7 years were over and the wedding feast was held, instead of his getting Rachel, he got Leah. And he was very upset. And Laban said, "Well, now you can still have Rachel, but you'll have to work 7 more years. And he did. And so he began to have children, sons, came along from Leah and Rachel and Bilhah and Zilpah. And then he worked for 6 years and began to get very wealthy with herds and flocks. But the time came when God said, Jacob, it is time for you to go back to the land of Abraham and Isaac. So he rose up and set out without Laban's knowing it. And he traveled back. And they came down on the east side of the Jordan, and they were at a spot over there, well north of the Jabbok River. And Laban caught up with him. And the night before Laban went down to deal with Jacob, the Lord spoke to Laban, and he said, Laban, you see to it that you do not speak anything good or bad to my servant Jacob. That is, in any effort to get him to go back. It is not my will that he go back. So Jacob did not go back, and he and Laban met, and they agreed that neither one would pass that place to do the other harm. And Laban went back home, and Jacob went on his way. Hardly had he gotten past this great emergency when he heard some news. Esau is on his way to meet you, and he has 400 men with him. And so Jacob was scared to death. As he traveled with his family, he came to the river Jabbok. And he sent his family on across the Jabbok River, right here. And he stayed on the north side of that river by himself. But an angel came to him, and they began to wrestle. And as they wrestled, of course, the angel could have annihilated Jacob at any moment. But this had great symbolism and meaning. Jacob had something upon his heart that he wanted at this point more than anything else. And only God could grant him what he wanted. So as he wrestled with this angel, this symbolized, as it were, his wrestling with God to achieve what he wanted and to receive the blessing that he wanted from God. And about daybreak, the angel said, "Let me go." Jacob said, "Not until you give me a blessing." Well, the angel at some point touched the hamstring of Jacob's leg, and he was lame. And the angel spoke to him and said, "Your name will no longer be Jacob, but your name will be called Israel, because you have striven with God and you have overcome." So the next day Jacob did meet Esau, his brother, and they were reconciled. And so Jacob came back into his own land and traveled down through the land, coming on down into the south and living down there eventually. Now Jacob had 12 sons, and these 12 sons become the foundation of the 12 tribes of Israel. Two of those sons were born of his Rachel, but Rachel died, no more children from Rachel, and so was away. And since he made a coat of many colors for Joseph to wear, to show his great love and esteem for his son. Joseph was a very good young man. When he saw others of his brothers doing things they ought not, he would bring the word to their father. They did not like that. He also told them about dreams that he had. He said, "Hear my dream. I dreamed that we were out gathering wheat in the field, in the bundles. And your bundles all bowed down to my bundle." And the brothers did not like that. "Huh, do you think that means we're going to bow down to you someday?" And he had another dream. This time it was the sun and the moon and 11 stars that bowed down to him. And his brothers resented the idea that they would ever bow down to him. And even his own father said, "Well, son, do you think this means that one day your father and I will bow down to you?" Years went by. Time went by. Not many years. Time went by. And Jacob sent his sons back up here to the area of Bethel, or actually Shechem. He sent his sons back up here to the area of Shechem to see how the herds and flocks were doing. When Joseph, and then after they had been gone for a while, Jacob said, "Well, I'm going to send you to see how your brothers are doing." So he sent Joseph up there to Shechem. But when Joseph came to Shechem, he found there were no brothers in the area. He found a man in the field. He asked the man about it. The man said, "Well, I heard them say they were going over to Dothan." And Dothan would be over in this area near the passes that went through the ridge of Mount Carmel here. So Dothan was over in that area. And it was near the caravan routes. So as Joseph drew near, his brethren saw him coming, and they said, "Huh, look, it's the master of dreams." And as he drew closer, they said, "Let's kill him." But Reuben said, "No, let's don't kill him. Instead, let's put him down in this hole over here, and we'll leave him there." What Reuben intended to do was to come back and get him out later when the brothers were gone. But Reuben had to leave for some purpose, and while Joseph was in the hole, his brothers were over here eating their meal and ignoring his cries and his pleas. There was a Midianite caravan that came through, and when the caravan came up to visit with these brothers and to exchange news with them, an idea occurred to Judah. Judah said, Hey, why don't we sell him to these traders and let them carry him off to Egypt? After all, he is our brother. We don't want to put our hand on him to kill him. But this will get rid of him, and we'll get a little money. So they sold their brother for 20 pieces of silver. And they would not hear his cries. They did not hear his pleas. The Midianites took him and put him in fetters, and they carried him off to the land of Egypt. When they got him down there, he was sold to a man named Potiphar. Potiphar was the captain of the king's executioners. And he took Joseph and put him over the things of his house. And Joseph was such an effective servant, such an efficient servant, that everything he touched went well. And Potiphar turned everything over to him. He didn't know anything about what was going on except what he had on his plate when he would eat. But he had a wife. Potiphar had a wife who had wicked plans for this handsome young slave. And so she said to Joseph, "Come, go to bed with me." And Joseph said, "No, I can't do this. Why, my master has trusted me with everything he has except you, and that's because you're his wife. How can I do this great sin against God?" And he got to where he wouldn't even stay in the house. But finally, one day, he had something he had to do in the house, and all the other servants were out of the house. And he came in, and this time Potiphar's wife actually caught a hold of his clothes and said, "Lie with me." And Joseph didn't even talk. He didn't say a word. He just shrugged out of that coat, left it in her hands, and fled from the house. And now here she was, rejected. And she felt she had been scorned, and she held this coat. And as the servants came in, she put her story together, and she said, "Look at what this Hebrew slave tried to do to me." As if it was all his fault when it was none of his fault. And when Potiphar came in, she showed him the coat and accused Joseph of trying to assault her or seduce her. Potiphar was angry. He put Joseph in prison. Here this 17-year-old boy that was sold as a slave has now had woe added to his misery because he's now been put in prison and only for trying to do what was right. But Joseph was one who always rose to the top wherever he was and worked diligently. And in the prison, he continued to work diligently. And the keeper would give him jobs to do. And soon Joseph had the complete favor and confidence of the keeper. One day there were two very important servants of Pharaoh put down there, the butler and the baker. And he came in to see them one day and he said, "What are you moping for?" An amazing question from a slave prisoner. But he asked them, "What are you moping for?" "Well, we've had dreams and we don't know what they mean, and we really would like to know what they mean." Joseph said, "Well, I serve a God who can tell the meaning of dreams. If you will tell me your dream, then perhaps I can tell you what they mean." And they told him. And the butler said, "I dreamed that there was this branch of a vine, and it put forth three clusters of grapes, and I took the clusters of grapes and squeezed them into Pharaoh's cup and gave it into his hand." Joseph said, "Your dream means that within 3 days, the Lord is going to lift your head up and restore you to your place in Pharaoh's court." The baker said, Hear my dream. I dreamed that there were three baskets of breads and pastries upon my head, and the birds came and ate the breads out of the baskets." What does that mean?" Joseph said, "That means that within 3 days, Pharaoh is going to lift your head up from off your shoulders. And he is going to execute you." And then he turned to the butler. There was no need to ask favors of the baker. So he turned to the butler and he said, "Remember me when you will come back into Pharaoh's court. Tell him about me. that I have done nothing to be here. I have done nothing to deserve to be in this prison. But when the butler got back to Pharaoh's court, he forgot and did not want to bring the matter back up. So he just forgot about Joseph. 2 more years went by of that time in that prison. Apparent hopelessness. Apparently no purpose. What is this all about? What is it all for? But at the end of 2 more years, Pharaoh himself had a dream. In fact, he had 2 dreams. And these dreams were more like nightmares. He dreamed that there were 7 fat cows eating grass down by the River Nile. And then there were 7 very skinny, sick-looking cows that came up out of the water, went over and just began taking big bites out of the cows. You know, cows don't eat cows. And this was a nightmare. Pharaoh woke up. He went to sleep again. And then he saw 7 fat ears of grain, like wheat grain or barley grain on the end of a stalk. 7 well-rounded fat ears of grain, and then they were eaten by 7 skinny, blasted, diseased-looking grains. And he couldn't wait anymore. He gathered his wise men in, and they couldn't tell him what it meant. So as they were going through all the furor, the butler got to thinking. He said, "I do this day remember my fault. When the baker and I were in prison, we had dreams that nobody could interpret. But there was a Hebrew down there in the prison, and he interpreted our dreams, and they came true, just as he said." Pharaoh said, "Bring him here instantly." So they went down, and after completely all giving up hope that there would ever be anyone to come, here out of the blue, someone comes and tells Joseph, "You are to get yourself ready as fast as you can and get up to Pharaoh's court." So Joseph cleaned up and shaved, and he got up there and he came before Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said, "I've been told you can tell the meaning of dreams." And Joseph said, "Well, it's not I, it's God who can tell me the meaning, but tell me your dreams." And so Pharaoh told him. And then Joseph said, "The dream, the message of the dream is really one. Even though you've dreamed 2 dreams, the message is one. God has let you know what is surely going to come to pass. There are going to be 7 years of plenty, followed by 7 years of famine. And in the years of plenty, the earth will bring forth by handfuls. And in the famine, it will be a famine such as you've never had in the history of Egypt. And therefore, my counsel is, during the years of plenty, appoint a man who will store up grain so that you will have something to eat when the famine comes." Pharaoh looked around on his court and he said, "Now where can I find a man in whom is the spirit of the gods as in this man?" And he said to Joseph, "I am making you the ruler over all the land of Egypt. Only upon this throne will I be greater than you." And he gave total power over the land of Egypt into the hands of Joseph. He got a wife from one of the priests of the land, a noble woman, and gave her to Joseph for his wife. So things had really turned around for Joseph. And he was a very busy man as the years went along. The 7 years of plenty came along, and he stored grain, and they'd count how many sacks were in this storehouse and how many sacks were in this storehouse, until they had so many sacks they couldn't even keep up with it. But then the famine came. And the famine had gone 2 years when one day there were 10 Hebrew men who came walking into the presence of Joseph. And Joseph was now 39 and didn't look at all like that 17-year-old Hebrew kid he had been 22 years before. He looked like a man with total power. And they came in and they bowed before him. What would you have thought? What would you have remembered if you were Joseph at that point? He knew who they were. "You are spies. That's what you are. You're here to spy the land out." "Oh, no, no, no. We're not spies. We're all the sons of one man." And he asked them about the father. And he asked them some questions about any more brothers at home. He put them in jail for 3 days. Really let him stew. But then he brought him out. He said, "Now, I'm going to show you that I am a man of mercy. I'm going to let you go home and take your grain with you. Except I'm going to keep one of you here. And he took Simeon out from among them and bound him in their presence. Now you won't ever get to see him again if you don't come back here. And if you don't bring that younger brother you say you have at home, if you don't bring him with you next time, you will not be allowed to see my face. So they left and went home, and on the way they opened their sacks, and there was the money they had paid. And they thought, oh no, what does this mean? They got home and they told their father, Jacob, what had happened. And he was so upset. Time came, the grain ran out. Time for them to go back again. And they said, Father, my sons, it's time for you to go and get some more grain. They said, Father, there's no need for us to go down if we don't carry Benjamin. The man said that we're not going to be allowed to see his face if we don't have Benjamin with us. Jacob said, why'd you even tell him you had a brother? They said, well, he asked us, Father. How did we know he was going to ask us something like that? Reuben said, now listen, Father, I promise I'll be responsible. And if I don't bring him back, you can kill my children. As if Jacob would kill his grandchildren. Jacob did not respect the guarantee that Reuben gave. Then Judah came and he said, Father, I promise you, I will bring Benjamin back. I'll be responsible for him. I will bring him back. But Jacob, faced by necessity, said, well, what can I do? Take him. And if he is killed, he is killed, and I will go down to my grave in sorrow. They made the journey back with Benjamin. And when they came in, Joseph saw them across the way, as it were. And he told his servant to prepare for him to eat the meal at their house. And so the meal was prepared. When Joseph got to the house, he said, the old man you spoke of, your father, is he all right? Yes, he's all right. And is this the younger brother you told me about? Yes, this is he. And at that point, Joseph had to run out because he was overcome by emotion and he wept. Then he washed his face. He came back in. Had them all seated. And here were the Egyptians eating at one table. Here was Joseph eating by himself at a table. And here were the brothers all seated according to age. And they marveled. During the meal, Joseph shamelessly just sent lots more stuff down to Benjamin. Just heaping favor and attention upon Benjamin. When it was time for the brothers to go back, Joseph said to his steward, take my silver cup and put it in the grain, in the mouth of the grain sack of the youngest son, the youngest brother. And he did. And as they were traveling home, they were so relieved to be away from that place when here came the servants of Joseph after them. And when the servant came up, he said, how could you do that? Do what? How could you steal my master's silver cup? After all he's done for you, how could you do that? They say, we haven't stolen his cup. You can just see the chins go out, you know, and defy. We haven't stole his cup. None of us has his cup. Why, if any of us has his cup, you can kill him. And so the servant began to look. He was a psychologist. So he began with the first sack. He knew it wasn't there. The servant knew right where the cup was. But he worked his way down from Reuben all the way down to Benjamin. By the time he got down to Benjamin, hadn't found the cup. And you can just imagine the brothers are feeling, we told you we didn't have it. He opens the last one, reaches in, there's the cup. And Benjamin is as shocked, mouth dropped as any of them. And now they're all remembering what they said. Whoever has it, you can kill him. But the servant said, I'm not going to kill him. I'm simply going to take him back. He will be a slave to my master. And the rest of you can go on home. If you want. They didn't want. They weren't about to do that. They'd learned their lesson. They weren't about to go back home. They'd become parents themselves. They'd seen their father suffer. They weren't going to do that again. So they came back. When they came back before Joseph, Joseph said it. Now, you didn't need to come back. You could go on home. No, we can't do that. So Judah came forward. Now, remember, Judah is the one who had said, lest sell him about Joseph. But it was also Judah who now many years later had told his father, I'll guarantee that I'll bring Benjamin back. So he came before Joseph and he said, now you remember the first time we were here how you said that we wouldn't even be able to see your face if we didn't bring this brother with us. So we told our father about it. He didn't want to let us do it. But I told my father that I would guarantee that I would bring this son back. And now if I come back without this son, I will not be able to face my father. I won't be able to take whatever that causes to happen to him. And therefore, what I would like to ask is that you keep me as a slave and let Benjamin go back to my father. And Joseph was just, he was so overcome. But the brothers didn't know. They didn't know what was going on. And just abruptly, he suddenly said to the servants, all you get out, go. Get out of here. And they quickly just got out. And when all the servants were out, the brothers were left. And the brothers were understandably, what's going on? Why did he run all the servants out? But they don't say anything. But you know this is all going through their minds. And then Joseph gets up and he walks out here toward them.